Simply the Best. That's for our guest, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, who is an author. She's worked in investments. She's an author. She just published the book, Percolate, Let Your Best Self Filter Through. And she has the website, Best Ever You. Simply the Best. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here today.
You know, how do you like the theme song? Is that something you want to put on your voicemail, Simply the Best?
I think I need to do that now. Thank you for that.
Fantastic. You've had such an interesting career, and there's so much I want to talk about, both in terms of your book and what you're doing in the area of helping people be their best. But let's talk about kind of the early years, where you grew up. And I always like to talk to people here in Maine on how they ended up here in Maine. And it looks like you were in Iowa. You grew up in Iowa?
I'm from away.
I know.
I know, from away.
Everyone appears, you know, if you weren't born here, it's away.
It's away. So I'm from Iowa. I was born in Minnesota and raised in the Quad Cities, which is Bettendorf, Iowa.
Moline.
Davenport. Davenport and Rock Island. And
there's a giant chiropractor institute out there.
Palmer.
The Palmer, which there's two or three in the country, and that's one of the biggest ones, right?
It is, yeah.
I was actually, in years ago and far away, I was a road manager for this guy, the Amazing Kreskin, and the very first show that he did in 1978 when I was with him was at the Palmer Institute in Davenport, Iowa. See, we have that connection going back. So you grew up there, and then talk a little bit about your academic career, and then we'll talk about how you got involved with financial services and then how that led to publishing and all the stuff you're doing.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. I got to go back and think now. You're going to make me think, huh? I graduated with honors from St. Ambrose University in Davenport, Iowa, with a degree in communications, and did a little bit of news anchoring, a little bit of reporting. But with my parents' bankruptcy and so forth, they owned a chain of video stores in Davenport, in Iowa and Illinois. I found myself really kind of lost, and I moved with them up to Minnesota, where my grandparents had lived, and got a job at Merrill Corporation, which was my first job. And I remember the CEO interviewing me for the job and said, "What are your goals?" And I said, "Well, I drove here today in a car that I had to climb over the stick shift of the car, to get into the passenger seat, roll down the window, and get out of the car through the passenger seat." And he gave me the job.
Well, and what type of work were you doing there that kind of created the foundation for what you're doing now?
They're a financial printing company. And so I spent so much of my time around the country developing the EDGAR system and helping the Securities and Exchange Commission help people file all that material you get when you own investments electronically, because before, you know, in the 80s, it was all paper, and now people get all that information to you know, 10-Qs and proxies and all that stuff electronically.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And I also, looking through your background, you have a fascinating background, and I encourage everyone listening to go to her website. It's Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, and her last name is spelled G-U-A-R-I-N-O. But all you have to do is put Elizabeth Hamilton in the Google browser. We'll take you're so famous. It will find you. But you also, early on in your career, but as a teenager, were Miss Iowa teenager. Yeah. So you were involved with pageants. You were Miss Maine twice in 2006 and 2011. And how did the interest start with pageants? And what was what were the duties of Mrs. Maine for 2 years?
Well, I love the right pageant, and the right pageant means they're either academically focused or have some type of cause that you speak about for the year. And when my parents went bankrupt back in 1988, I needed a way to find money for college. And so I entered a pageant, not thinking about winning the pageant, but thinking about a scholarship.
Right.
And I got both. And so they helped me go to school, and I spoke about drinking and driving for the year. And that kind of started a lifelong interest in promoting causes or brands, or, you know, I love marketing and messages and helping people get their message out into the world and develop their platforms for whatever it is that they're passionate about. And so I didn't do any more pageants for a really long time until my mid-30s, when somebody said, "Hey, do you want to enter this?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'll give it a shot." Thinking again more about the cause, and won both. And Mrs. Maine, the people here in Maine were fantastic to me. I promoted Karen Baldacci's reading program, and still do that. I love children's literacy, and did that again in 2011. And then myself, you can interrupt me if I'm going on and on, but
no.
You know, myself, I have food allergies. And so that's always part of what I talk about. Nearly dying a couple times from food allergies. I own foodallergyzone.com also. And we help people stay alive and thrive with food allergies, particularly children, because 1 in 13 kids has a food allergy now. And we're losing children to peanut allergies and nut allergies and things like that.
It feels like there's much more awareness about that now than there was in the past, which is great. I mean, you see it in restaurants and you see it in public facilities, you know, in terms of peanut. And because of food processing, you know, peanut dust can almost be anywhere, right?
Yeah. It's a it's a really dangerous allergy. So I live my daily life with anaphylaxis. And it's in the book, you know, nearly dying from an allergic reaction to almonds and a second one to walnuts while I was pregnant with my third child. They saved our lives in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. So that's the tie-in to pageants. Funny tie-in, but if it's got a cause or a platform, I really
love... Did you have a positive experience in general?
Because
there's a lot of a lot of good press and bad press.
Yeah.
There's a lot of...
You know, you have to pick and choose your behavior at that.
Right.
And I chose... you learn with age, too. Maybe not so much when I was a teenager. You know, you wanted to win or whatever, but... When I got older and did the pageants, I really loved helping see other people be their best. And I had people give things to me like, here, you need a different pair of socks or you need different eyelashes or let me do your hair or whatever. And it changes with age. And the girls were much nicer as with age, for sure.
Shani, have I ever told you my pageant story?
Yeah, have you been in a pageant, Steve?
No. I don't know what kind of pageant that would be. But no, I But Shani, have I told that story?
No, I haven't heard it.
Oh, wow. Well, let me share.
Please.
By the way, you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O and News Talk WLOB 1310 AM. So a young Steve-O, I think that would be circa 1985. I was in Michigan, and I was an executive with Coca-Cola. I was the field marketing manager. And I got a call from Miss Michigan pageant. And they were like, we're looking for celebrity judges. And would you like to be a judge for Miss Michigan? And I thought, well,
sure.
I'm living in Michigan. Being a beauty pageant judge seems like a fun idea. It wasn't a fun idea.
Really?
It wasn't a fun idea. So all these young girls came to the pageant. It was a 2 or 3 day thing. And as you said when you were describing your experiences, it really depends on which pageant, in what state, and who's running it. Because like anything else, there are people that are really reputable in different types of things.
Absolutely.
And there are people that do not approach that with the same credibility and the same respect and the same. But in this pageant, there were like 7 judges. One of the judges was this old guy who looked like Ted Baxter from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And he was like, yeah, I'm here doing this. Good to meet you. And he was like the local weather guy, right? The other guy was Madonna's brother, and the irony is everyone always referred to him, and this is when she was just kind of starting out in her career. She was successful, but she wasn't global, and his name, I think, was like Chris Sincone or something like that, but nobody ever knew his name, and to this day, I don't, because he was always referred to as Madonna's brother. So I've got Ted Baxter, I've got Madonna's brother, and I've got 3 or 4 other people. And at this particular pageant, there was way too much interaction between the contestants and the judges.
Oh, sure.
Which has got to be a no-no, right? So, like, day one, there's a cocktail party. And so all the judges are meeting with the contestants. And this one contestant came up to me and just looked me in the eye and said, I'm a third-generation Libra. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She goes, that means I'm going to win. And then another contestant wanted to go horseback riding with me in the middle of the night, which I said no.
She's like, I've never done anything like that.
I know
so
you
clear.
Haven't, but you were sharing your pageant experience, and I was sharing. I went into it as a young guy thinking this will be an interesting, rewarding experience, and then other things more egregious happened.
Yeah.
More salacious in terms of the contestants and the judges. And by the time we get to the final day, it felt dirty.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling like we were giving young women opportunities for scholarships, education, enlightenment, self-confidence,
right,
whatever, it
you
was
felt slimed.
Well, there was there was money involved, and corporate sponsors were doing things. Ted Baxter was giving some girl a shoulder massage, which I'm pretty sure is
it's not allowed.
It is not
allowed.
No,
you're not supposed
you
to
should,
do that.
The judges
Even
should,
if your feet hurt, the judges are not supposed
I
to be rubbing
know.
Them.
And I knew enough back then. Horseback riding at midnight. No.
No.
The horses don't want to be out at midnight. I didn't want to be out at midnight. And some contestant from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan shouldn't have been out at midnight.
No.
So that was my experience.
Yeah. I've seen that. I have not been involved in that.
Okay.
I kind of, when I saw it happen, it's you go the other way.
I know.
Yeah, stuff like that happens. But the pageant that I was in as a Mrs. was Mrs. International, and that is a really cool pageant. They're at a real high level involved with Go Red.
Right.
When I was involved, I raised like $5,000 for Go Red for Women.
That's great.
Yeah, they're all platform oriented. There's none of that stuff that goes on, and it's a great, great system.
Yeah. So we have Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino here, author of the new book, Percolate. Is this available everywhere?
It's
got to be available everywhere. Amazon and bookstores and everywhere.
Cool thing. Target just picked it up.
Wow.
I nearly passed out when I saw that the other day. I'm like, no way.
That's
and
great.
Something cool happens with that book like every day. Like today we're here and we're talking about the book and it just, it is
Let your best self filter through. It
yeah.
is percolating
yeah.
and the cover art shows a cup of coffee with
words,
courage, awaken, acceptance, purpose. But instead of percolating, which you think about as being filtering down,
we're
these
doing
the reverse. Or the aroma is going up. So to me, that's twice as good.
Yeah.
Anyone can go in one direction with Percolate, but this lets you benefit from the aroma of self-help elements in personal growth and Percolate.
Yeah, it's a, you know, self-help, I think, is a tricky area to write a book in. It's so competitive, and so many people have so many things to say about how you should lead your life or what you should do. And that book is really open-ended with a notion behind it that life's full of endless possibilities, and you go where you place your energy. And I really believe that you do. Where you put your energy, you're going to go.
Shani read it last week, and we went out and got it. And prior to reading it, I don't want to say she was known for being grumpy, but
did it change a life?
She had a bit of a dark cloud sometimes, and since reading the book, it has been transformational.
Oh gosh, that just gave me chills. It
was
so cool,
incredible,
incredible.
Aww.
So see how happy she is? She's smiling. She's a week ago. That's not the same Shani.
You can find gratitude in every moment if you really pay attention.
It's true.
I really think that no matter, this morning, my dad is really sick at home in Minnesota, and he's a big part of that book, and he is not feeling well. He's a stroke survivor now and a kidney cancer survivor, and I was talking to my parents. I was actually texting them in the car, the parking lot, before I came in to make sure everything was okay. And my parents, even my dad, as sick as he is today, he's like, never give up. You go get him. You be cool. You do your thing. What a great book. I'm so proud of you. And all those things. And my dad is, my parents really are just such a huge, they're huge teachers of never give up and find that gratitude. My mom in my dad's hospital room, we'd look around and say, you know, this sucks. It just flat out sucks. But we're going to find some joy somewhere.
Yeah, that's a great message.
To help. And even if it didn't inspire him, because, you know, he was in a coma or whatever, it inspired so many people to have that attitude who were in the other rooms or the family members in the waiting rooms and things like that. We changed so many lives being in that hospital that the doctors would comment, your energy is different in this room than anywhere else. It was interesting.
That's
very
wonderful.
Some powerful lessons if you have loved ones who are ill or in the hospital. Your energy matters.
Well, thank you for sharing, because when this airs, it's also live streamed. I hope you send your folks the link. And I feel like I've almost met them on the air. So hello,
really
Elizabeth,
cool.
folks.
Jim and Carolyn, hi.
Jim and Carolyn, thanks for being part. Before we get into the book and some of the let your best self filter through, how did you end up in Maine? So let's talk
about
coming to Maine, and then we'll talk about, being a life coach and what that means in terms of both your interest and how you translate that into a business and the book and all that. But how did a young girl go from Iowa to Minnesota and then end up here in the great state of Maine?
So I went from Iowa to Minnesota to California.
Oh.
And we lost a job in the dot-com bust, and we moved up to Tahoe to be sort of well, kind of ski bums for a few years. And we got to the point where we're like, okay, honey, I think we need a job. And some job opportunities came up, and one was in Minnesota and one was in Maine. And it's interesting because for some reason as a kid, I always thought I would end up here, and I never knew how or why.
Have you ever been here?
Never been here, never anything. But I remember Miss Maine from when I was Miss Iowa, and we were in Hawaii, and she had that Maine accent, and I was kind of fascinated by her, and I'm like, I know I'm going to end up there somehow, somewhere.
Wow.
So when the job came up, I'm like, Maine, I always knew I was going to end up there. Let's go there. And I checked in with my parents, and I'm like, all right, I could come home, but it's not very like me to come home. Can I go to Maine? And they were like, all right, awesome. We'll go there. We'll eat lobster. We'll hang out. We'll visit. And it'll be a new part of the country. And we moved. We moved all the way across the country from Tahoe with 25,000 pounds of stuff, 4 kids, 3 cats, and nothing broke, which was amazing.
Wow.
Noise moved us. I think it's noise.
Yeah. How long ago was that?
That was 10 years. 10 years ago now we moved here, and we were in search of a better life, and we found it here. The schools are amazing. We have kids, one graduate of the Falmouth school system and 3 in it, and it's just phenomenal. We love living here.
That's such a great story. We just need a few more 100,000 people like you coming to me. Unfortunately, we're exporters of people. Typically, people 18 to 34, we're losing that demo and that population group.
I see that.
But having somebody such as yourself with a family deciding to, I don't know how we would construct a campaign. If you're in Minnesota and you have kids and you want to just come to
I talk to people every day about Maine.
Wow.
Because in my social media, I've got about 2 million people that follow me in social media, and I write Good Morning from Maine, hashtag gratitude. And just today, if you look at my Facebook, somebody posted, hey, I'm vacationing here because of you, hashtag gratitude. And they posted a picture of their camp where they are. And so we get lots of visitor traffic in because of the social media posts from Best Ever You and Facebook. I know we do because they're always texting me and saying they're here. But I talk to a lot of people prior to their moving here.
Right.
The school sometimes will say, hey, you know, talk to Elizabeth. She moved here or whatever. And so I just talked to somebody from Chicago who was thinking about moving here.
You may be our best tool for economic
development. I'm a tourism lady, I'm telling you.
I know. I've never been a fan of the sign on the highway that says open for business. The sign should be talk to Elizabeth Hamilton.
Yeah, no. It about should, why to live here.
Why to
gratitude.
Live here.
I think it's so easy to live here, though. There's no traffic.
It's a
quality of life choice.
The ocean is magical. Yeah. The lakes, the rivers, the environment. And I think environment plays a big role in our personal happiness because we're connected to the earth, right?
I think you have to find your friends here. You have to find your people here that you know and love and, create your community. And sometimes, you know, like you get to create your job, too. It's a cool thing about Maine. I've done things in Maine that I don't think I would do in a bigger place, like be on commercials. And,
right.
It's Maine's open to you if you're open to it.
You never know who you bump into in Maine.
No.
I was on an airplane a couple of years ago, and I was sitting next to a guy, and we were coming from Chicago back to Portland. And he asked me what I did, and I said I worked at an agency. And I asked him, and he's like, "Well, I work at Motorola." And he was just really this nice man. I thought he was like selling cell phones. And as we talk, I learned that he's CEO of they have 4 or 5 divisions. He's CEO of one, and he's turned out to be a really, really good friend. He and his family are just Dennis Carey, wonderful people, but. At all walks of life. There's incredible artists here. There's incredible writers and authors. There's people in all fields that seem to gravitate to me because of our quality of life. And
you don't have to have your hair extensions in or your nails done.
I have quit my hair extensions and my nails long ago.
Yeah. Look at mine.
No, your nails are fantastic.
Well, yeah, they're beautiful,
aren't they? They are fantastic, Elizabeth.
I just painted them today.
No, but it's a natural place. And I travel all over, and people have a similar reaction to Maine. They're like, oh, you're from Maine. I don't think they get that in New Jersey. I don't think people...
My husband's from New Jersey. Oh. And he definitely... No, seriously, we just went back for a 60th wedding anniversary in New Jersey, and they all still said, what do you do there? Why do you live there? What is it? Well, what is, this is funny.
I used to live in New Jersey, too, and there are some beautiful areas in New Jersey, but, you know, there are states where everyone feels protective about your own state, right? But there are some states that, you know, I don't know if it's quite as warranted as other states.
Yeah.
You know, the New Jersey's great. They have, they're close to New York. It's the Garden State. If you go to the southern part of the state, there it's more open and green.
Every time I go to New Jersey, I see a different part of New Jersey that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, I can't figure out the whole you have to let them pump your gas thing.
Yeah, isn't that trippy?
It is really trippy. And if, for anyone listening to News Talk WLOB, yeah. For some reason, I think it may be the only state in the country that has this, because it goes back 40 years ago. All the gas stations, I worked as a gas station attendant in Needham, Mass., and there was no such thing as self-serve. You pulled in, the person came out, they said, what do you want? And you
said,
fill her up or give me $5 worth or wash the, you know, check the oil.
Yeah, wash the windshield, oh, yeah. The lights. And all that
almost
stuff.
Every time you'd check the oil, because cars back then weren't that efficient. And so checking the oil was a necessity, because every two or three times in, you had to add a quarter of oil. Cars now are so good. But in New Jersey,
they do it all.
Every gas station you pull in, you can't do self-serve.
No.
And they have it.
They almost clobber you if you try.
Yeah. You know, I don't think it's any kind of union thing, but I think it's somehow tied into they made an economic decision decades ago to preserve that segment of the workforce.
It's certainly awesome. I mean, you don't have to get out of your car if it's
cold. And the gas is about the same price, but it just feels like if they took that labor component and had people do a lot of their own self-service, gas would be even cheaper.
Probably. I wonder if they make you bag your own groceries there.
No, that would be really far out. I'm kidding. That's but I lived in New Jersey, and there are parts that are beautiful, but there are places. And that's the thing about the whole country. When you travel around, every state and every area has not only just dialect or food or something, but different things, different trippy things.
Yeah.
Iowa. Who doesn't love Iowa? Who doesn't
I just went back to Iowa for a book signing.
Davenport?
No, it was so much fun. I was in Davenport at the Barnes & Noble at North Park Mall, hometown. I was on Paula Sands Live. Everything that I dreamed of doing as a kid, like being on Paula Sands, I got to go do as an older person. It was so much fun. And
most people only know Iowa from Field of Dreams, right?
Yeah,
the movie, doesn't it feel like that a little bit, where it's, you know?
It's just so easy, and everybody's so nice and friendly, and the northern part of the state is a bit flat with all these huge windmills now.
Right.
But the eastern Iowa, the section of eastern Iowa, is very hilly, and you get closer to the river. And but it's gorgeous.
I'm a fan of Iowa.
I am a big fan of Iowa.
Yeah. I mean, it's in the Quad Cities. Not many people can name them.
No.
But you did.
Yeah, I do. I know them.
We have Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino here. She is an author, founder, CEO of Best Ever You Network. Now let's talk about both your book and the Best Ever You Network, and what is it like, and how does one become certified as a professional life coach? Because I think that experience led to you having a perspective to write the book. So why don't we start there? What is a certified professional life coach, and how did that lead to you writing this great book?
Well, it's another credential that you have. It allows you to help people. You take a number of classes and courses and hours and so forth to become a life coach. I actually haven't pursued being a master life coach and gone on and on and on. I figure I've got just enough
to like
maybe
karate?
Be a little dangerous. Yeah,
so,
you're black belt
life
coaching.
So you're certified, but you can be a master professional life coach.
You can be the best life coach ever with thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of practice and things. It's almost like being a therapist, only therapy tends to look in reverse and life coaching tends to look forward.
Okay.
So it's kind of fun. Tends to take you from where you are right now to where you want to go. So life coaching kind of has a different spot on that. And I really believe everybody needs a coach, a life coach, a health coach. I mean, even the best athletes have coaches.
Right.
The CEOs have coaches. You know, coaches need coaches. I mean, we all have somebody that we go to see things in a different way. And so life coaching is it's kind of one of those endless possibility fields as well. But that did lead into, I started the Best Ever You Network before that, and life coaching came after. So the Best Ever You Network, I started, I left a 17-year career in the financial services industry on a whim. I came home and said, honey, I quit.
Wow.
And yeah, that's his reaction.
Did you check with your life coach, or was that, you just
went solo? No, I didn't have a life coach. That was a solo.
A life coach would have been, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Yeah. And that was the reaction I got at home. Wow. What did you just do? And I said, no, we're going to be all right. I quit this job. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to do something different. And here's a business plan I wrote. And he's like, well, what's this? And I said, you know, there's got to be something better. I'm going to help people be their best. And it really was confusing at first, as anything, any idea is. It's like, you're going to do what? And I said, well, I'd like to be an author and a speaker and have a radio show and do all these things. And you're starting with nothing, just an idea and a hope and a promise and so forth. And I remember my first radio show, it was like talking into air.
Wow.
Yeah. The thing has a couple million downloads now, so it's doing its thing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So literally, you went from one field, financial services, came home and had some sort of either epiphany or something where you said, going forward, I think I want to be a life coach. I want to connect with people in a way that's positive. I want to be this positive external influence of optimism, of hopefulness, and
help people find gratitude and help people move their energy around properly, because I really think people get stuck and sometimes lost even in and can't find their way out of situations, especially. And I think a lot of this I learned from sickness, from my own allergies, from my father, seeing my parents struggle and so forth with various things. And they're really an inspiration of how they can smile through the worst of things.
Talk a little bit about energy, because we're getting into an area here where most people are anchored in their beliefs in terms of medical science and things that they can kind of feel and touch. But the human experience and our humanity is comprised of other things.
Sure.
And I've never been able to articulate it, so maybe as a certified professional life coach and author, you can share. But what is this concept of human energy and how you personify it in the work that you do and in your writing? Because everyone's familiar with kind of the physiology of the physical being, but there's other energy that connects us all. There's other energy, I believe, that connects us to our human experience and our life experience, and whether it's the earth or animals, we're connected in some way that doesn't necessarily have a scientific explanation.
It's really strange, isn't
but,
it?
But there is an energy, and people, you know, connect it to spirituality sometimes, or religion, or they put, you know. But at different experiences, I think most people have felt it. Talk a little bit about your thought about human energy and energy potential and how we have the power to direct positive energy and create energy that's positive. Conversely, there are some people, and we all know them, that just emit negative energy. They're either the grumpy guy who says, get off my yard, or something. But talk about positive energy.
Well, I think it all starts with a choice and awareness. It's are you even aware of what you're doing? Are you just going from moment to moment? Are you actually thinking? And it is a choice to be grumpy or happy. It's a choice. And every second I can frown and get all, or I can be happy. And I think we all have our own PhDs in what makes us happy and what our energy levels are and things like that. And I don't think I'm by any stretch some expert on the field of, you know, I don't have a certified PhD in energy or anything like that, but we're all learning as we go. I think that's really important to know. We all learn as we age, as we do everything. But I think it all starts with really realizing that your moments matter. Every single moment, every single breath you take matters. And how you use your energy in your moments while you're alive matters. And if you can practice that, and sometimes it really takes people to do a complete reversal of their personality at present and you could put it up on your mirror. You could put it up in your closet. You can put it up where you work, on your desk, whatever. Just a hashtag gratitude, or a hashtag moments matter, or a hashtag percolate, because the book helps you change. The book is a 9-step process to help you change and learn to find gratitude and learn to find joy and learn to operate from a core sense of peace within.
And you use the word gratitude quite a bit.
I do.
And on Twitter, hashtag gratitude usually accompanies your Good Morning from Maine.
Yeah.
What does the word mean to you, and what is the context that you're using it in terms of gratitude
For anything.
For anything, for everything.
For anything
in
and
your
everything.
Life,
yeah, for everything. Positive and negative. Because even if you encounter somebody negative, they're still probably, you're both going to walk away with some learning experience in that moment. You may find, well, you don't want to be around that person, or they don't want to be around you, or maybe they realize they're negative and want to learn how to be positive. There's always something that, every time you bump into somebody, you learn something new. And in this really, really, really fast-paced world, we're living in everything moves all the time. I love to encourage people to slow down. I do the opposite. Pause. Take a breather off of the cell phone.
I was going to ask you about that. Technology seems like it's moving the conveyor belt of life quicker.
It's great. I mean, it's cool. We're connected worldly and all these things. But
how do we disconnect in a way that's meaningful, that lets us, you know, I don't want to get all zen on you. But I do think we have such a capacity inside ourselves that we've gotten so dependent on external devices, external stimuli, external stuff that we carry, incredible feelings, thoughts, insights, and connectivity in ourselves. And it feels like it's great to enjoy external influences and stimuli, whether it's television in moderation or experiences. But it feels like as technology has become more amorphous and pervasive in our lives, we've gotten a little further away from the inner voice, or kind of who we are as people.
I think that's definitely true. And I think we've gotten away from picking up the, you know, simple phone and calling people instead of texting, you know, the interpersonal communication.
Right.
And that's sometimes what I remember to mean to slow down. It could be as simple as opening the door for someone at the grocery store, or random acts of kindness are kind of fun.
Right.
And they don't have to do with your cell phone or your Xbox or your PS4 or your Bluetooth or your anything. They have to do more with being there for one another. And that's that pausing, being there for yourself, being there for other people, and being aware. It's, again, how are you spending your moments?
Yeah, I think awareness, I think the point you just made is a really important one. I literally, in terms of traveling or in airports or, you know, going to the mall or wandering around, I'm witnessing in the last decade or so people less aware
Of others.
And some of it we can blame on technology. Like, we've all walked somewhere and held up our iPhone and text something. But there are sometimes people, there's, you know, you'll be on a conveyor belt at an airport, and a person will be standing in the middle, and a person will be walking into someone. Literally, we've become very modular in terms of our own existence, and we've become kind of self-contained in many ways.
Yeah.
Whereas I think years ago, there was more interdependence. You know, we didn't have the technology. We had small groups of people, small clusters, tribes, groups, communities, villages. And now, I think that you know, even socialization skills. I think I sound like my father.
No, we sound like we're old, don't we?
I know, but those darn kids.
Those darn kids.
But there are kids now that they don't really communicate.
You have to teach it, for sure, because our children are being raised in an environment where they come out of the bathroom with a phone instead of a magazine, or a computer, you know, a tablet instead of a book. And so they're different. We live in a, you know, the kids born probably don't know what a landline is, or, you know, there's just so many a TV with a knob or
well, I know. My,
there's so many different
my
things.
My 23-year-old daughter, she has cousins that live 20 miles away from us, and I asked her a few months ago, she talked to her cousin. I said, hey, have you talked to your cousin so-and-so? And she goes, yeah, yeah, she's doing
texted.
She's doing great. I go, well, how'd she sound? And she was like, well, what do you mean? I go, when I asked if you talked to her, she goes, well, I texted
her. Yeah.
And I said, well, how do you know, what was the last time you saw her? And she said, well, you know, 2 or 3 years. I go, when's the last time you talked to her on the phone? She goes, we don't do that.
We text.
We either text or Facebook. And those aren't great vehicles for the nuance of humanity. You wouldn't know if a person had some horrible illness or they were really bad. And if a person says, how are you doing? The reflex of fine doesn't come across digitally.
No. Yeah, I agree. So
we need to percolate.
Yeah, we need to percolate. But,
which gets back to the book, Percolate, by Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. We need to all run out. I already have copies, so I'm not going to run out and buy more, but we need to be more conscious, more
of
aware.
Ourselves. Yeah, I think in all those situations you just described, like being in the airport and seeing somebody do something that doesn't go with your behavior, it's important to remember that we're all in control of our behavior. And so when you see something so wrong, you can throw a little gratitude that way and even change that person's behavior by interacting with them in a different way or somebody else. But, you know, we're all in control of ourselves. So while you might not be able to change that person standing over there, you can certainly recognize it and not be that way. And the world puts more gratitude into the universe that way for sure.
Shani, what do you think? You've read the book. Are you putting more gratitude into the universe?
Joy.
Absolutely. Positive energy, positive thoughts, and then you get that in return.
Yeah, isn't it funny how we can all see that in other people, but sometimes the real challenge is to see it in ourselves.
Isn't that the hardest thing?
It is?
Even if you go like onto Facebook and you see on your feed, you'll see, hey, look at my kid, he graduated. Hey, look at my touchdown. Hey, look at my home run. Hey, look at this vacation I'm on. Hey, 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 all these positive things. People aren't putting that out there to make you feel bad that your life sucks. Or some part about that.
Yeah.
But isn't it interesting how sometimes some of those things might make you feel less than, like, oh, I'm not on that vacation, or I don't have that new car, or my kid just flunked out, or whatever. And I think it's important to remember that, once you start comparing yourself to other people, we do this thing called we block our own gratitude. The second you do, like Steve, if we went out into the parking lot and I saw your car and you saw mine and I went, God, I'd love to have that car. I don't have your car. Your car's way cooler. It's brand new or whatever it is. And mine's that one over there that's got the dent and the rust and the crappy seat and the this and the that. Instantly, I've blocked my own gratitude for what I have. And I think it's really important for people to remember that, because we live in this age where we're seeing all this information all the time. And we do that. It's nature to be like, their house is bigger, their car is nicer, their job's better, they're this and that.
But what do you think has created that, in your opinion, based on your years of kind of being connected to this?
Success,
a little bit. But is it narcissism? Have we as a society gotten too more into self?
Yeah.
Not in a good gratitude way, but in kind of a... Because it feels like when you look back in past generations, there was greater selflessness.
Yeah,
it was.
I think so.
It was, don't ask what your country can do for you, ask for what you can do for the country. And there was a greater sense of, you know, I'm going to help my neighbor raise his barn, because at some point I'm going to need help from him, because if my crop doesn't come in, I'm going to need food from him. And we became, you know, maybe it was driven by preservation or need, but we had more human connections and we had a greater sense of we're on this journey together, so let's be kind and let's be connected. Except in the Old West, when they used to shoot each other. But aside from that, people had a greater sense of, I'm not going to be able to get through this journey without help. But now we've gotten to a point where everyone is almost like, well, I can do it on my own. I've got my iPhone and I've got my information and all that.
A little bit of that, but let me change that thinking a little bit if I can and add to it. I agree with you in some cases, but I would also add to you that with our social media, it opens us up to such a greater amount of people that you might not have ever met in your life. I've got some of the best people that I know who I can ask for this or that, or they can ask me for something, that aren't even in Maine. They might be in Australia or someplace else. So I would say that. And then I'd also say that
And you have 2 million followers.
Yeah, there's a bunch, and not all in one place. They're all in different spots on Blog Talk Radio and Twitter. But there's about 250,000 people on Twitter. And, you know, I love my social media, and I love connecting with people on social media. And so it takes, it's not a replacement, but it does counter some of those things where you might feel like you don't have a community anymore. But I would tell you, I don't know that I completely agree that we don't have community anymore. It just depends on what it is. I mean, I see that little girl in Falmouth, that Haley. Have you heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
That girl. The community is rallying. You know, we rally around people who need help and things like that. So you still see it.
I think you see it. And
I don't know if I have the right answer. But it's definitely changed, and I agree with you.
It changes also because some of our humanity is impacted by proximity.
Yeah.
Did
I say her name wrong? Hallie or Haley?
Hallie.
I think it's Hallie. Yeah, right. Sorry about that if I did.
But when, you know, we do something here in the marketing company where we call it, there's a metric called levels of emotional investment. When people are emotionally invested in terms of marketing with brands or clients and customers, when people care about a brand, you know, some people really care about, Volvo cars,
right,
because it's an iconic brand. Some people feel that way about technology, and Apple iPhone goes beyond just the communication technology and it means something. But when you have proximity, it's easier to tap into your own sense of either gratitude or humanity, because you see it.
That makes sense.
But when our time is consumed on other stuff, our own personal needs, our own personal self-contained gratitude, you can't hear what's outside of yourself, and it's easy to block it out. And I think that years ago, when we had close proximity, if your neighbor was sick, you empathized, but you also connected with, because you were literally and figuratively so close.
Got it. Yeah.
And stuff that's happening now around the world, I think we've become desensitized. You look at Somalia, you look at Libya, you look at global political war stuff. And when we hear about a tragedy and it reaches a certain point, we get more of a collective response. You know, I think 2 or 3 years ago, there was a mine collapse in Chile.
Yep.
And there were 20 miners that were trapped in a mine. And then for 4 days, 5 days, they came up with this tube. They drilled down. And almost everyone was following it because it did something to make us empathize or feel. There was a tube. It was Chile.
Yeah.
But right now, there are literally tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people around the world that are in worse shape than those Chilean miners.
Yeah. Right, you never hear about them.
You won't hear about it because, you know, there are things happening in Central America, things happening in the Mideast.
I wonder that a lot, how news stories are selected.
A critical mass.
Don't you wonder that sometimes? It's
there's psychology, because when it reaches a point of critical mass, something gets triggered in the collective humanity, and all of a sudden the Chilean miners become, this is a story. And then they go to New York and they go on David Letterman and the shows, and they all do book deals, and they find out that one of the miner's wife was dating the other miner afterwards.
And then there's
a second story. But and that's important to focus on events like that. But my concern is that those things become, like, as Americans, and I think it's probably humanity around the world, when it's formatted and packaged that way, where CNN tells us that, you know, whether it's the airplane that disappeared a month or two ago, where all of a sudden, you know, CNN couldn't program enough the plane.
Yeah, talking about it, actually.
We got a ping. We didn't have a ping. Let's go to the guy in the trainer airplane. And it's a horrific story, the idea of a plane falling out of the sky. And so it captures the imagination. But I think there were about 300 passengers, and obviously it looks like all those lives are lost. So terrible. But in the same moment that's happening, tens of thousands of people are suffering in so many other ways. But if it's not packaged in that way,
You never hear about it.
It's too easy to avoid.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because sometimes that evokes a response of you. There's nothing you can do to help, and I wonder sometimes if that brings us back locally to things that you can do in your immediate area and neighborhood and community and state and so forth. Because there's so many things just happening here in Maine that need attention and help. Like kids hungry. I was at a benefit. A couple weeks ago for Think Local, and it was benefiting kids who are hungry here in Maine and so forth. I mean, there's just so many different things.
23% of kids under 18 suffer some form of food
hunger.
Insecurity, which is the...
That made me just sick and cry. I just think about that as a mom of four boys.
This summer, the other problem is this summer, so much of the economic turmoil trickles down, and where is many kids under 18... during the school year, there are nutrition programs, food programs that at least provide food. Most of those funds for summer programs have been cut.
Yeah.
So there's literally thousands and thousands of kids this summer that right this second are hungry. But if it's not packaged in a way like the Chilean miners or the airplane goes down, it's easy to kind of just go, well, what can I do, or how does it impact me directly?
Let's talk about it more then, because I hope people listening hear that and help, because it's definitely an issue in this state.
It's a
huge issue.
It's a huge issue, and we try to support. Yeah, again,
I didn't intend to talk about
this. Was going to be a feel good thing, and here we are.
Instead
of percolating, we're doing something else. No, but I think it's important to bring attention.
Something though in the book that I was going to tie in, but
the thing that is important. You know, we're doing something here later this month, Social Media Day, and we're all of the funds raised, we are giving United Way.
Good.
And so there are things you can do, and whether it's, in Portland, Preble Street, whether it's United Way, there are organizations where if people listening call up, go to the website and say, I don't know how I can help, whether it's volunteering or donating money, but we can all help. You know, 2 weeks ago or a week ago, we had a blood drive here. American Red Cross, anyone who wants to give blood, anyone that, is healthy enough to give blood, we should give blood. You know, some people cannot give blood, and that's fine. They have iron or something in their blood. But we can do things if we stay aware of it.
Yeah, and that's point eight in the book. That's by the next round. And that's all about, I have the saying, it's percolate I, percolate me, percolate us, and percolate we. And when you do those four things, you percolate peace.
Wow.
And so that ties into the community. And I know we can get specific on charities and things like that. But, again, it can go back to as simple as buying somebody. Like when I was in D.C. last week, my son and I bought somebody's coffee in back of us. Simple. It doesn't have to be you feeling like, well, you don't have $100 to give today to
something.
But isn't
that the best feeling when somebody does that for you?
She was.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Cool.
I did that once in a toll booth where I paid the toll and I said, hey, listen, here's another buck. Please pay for the person behind.
Yep. And it's somebody's gas.
And it's a dollar, but it's the idea of a random act of kindness, which is a colloquial term, but it's about doing something unexpected.
Yeah, and whatever scale that you can do that on. Some people have a little bit more power or time or money or whatever it is, and some people do what they can. But,
You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM. We have Elizabeth Hamilton Garino here. She has two websites. One is www.besteveryou.com. And then also her full name, ElizabethHamiltonGarino.com. Also, Twitter. She is unbelievably active on social media between Facebook, and I was just on her Twitter. She embarrasses me with my meager little Twitter followers, with a quarter of a million Twitter followers.
It's a city.
It is a city. It's two big football stadiums in the Midwest. Talk a little bit about social media and how you have combined your interests and your background in communications and broadcasting with your professional interest now as a professional life coach and author. How important and how effective and how active are you in social media and digital media to take something that is about humanity and then conveying it digitally, which is almost...
It's really hard to do.
Which is hard because it's almost the absence of humanity because it's kind of a conduit.
Yeah.
So talk about social media and digital and websites and all that and how active you've been and what that means for your work.
I started on MySpace.
Wow. I started with an AOL.
I did AOL.
I had one of those discs. Remember, you used to get 10 of them in the mail every week.
And
then you would go on the phone system with the modem and go... And then all of a sudden, I started.
Your words are coming across the screen like one every 10 minutes.
I started there too, 20 years ago.
Yep, exactly. And what a difference Facebook has made and Twitter and so forth. And I think whenever you, people are on social media for all different reasons. It depends. I think it's really important to figure that out. And if you're on there for personal, don't mix personal and business. Have one account for one and one account for the other or whatever, because your branding and passion and mission get confused. So I like to tell people that. But I think so many people still say, I don't need that. I don't want to be on Facebook. I don't want to be on Twitter. It's such a waste of time. And I always say the same thing. You're missing a generation of people, especially if you have a company. If you have a company and you want it to be around, that younger next generation are on there. They're on Google. They're on Snapchat. They're on Instagram. They're on all these things that to somebody 45, you sit and go, well, do I really need an Instagram account? My kids will tell you, yeah, Mom, you do for best ever you. And, you know, my kids help set up the radio show. You know, they help Mom stay, you know, cool and savvy. And you're not supposed to use the word cool.
Perfect.
Perfect. But, yeah, so there are a lot of people that follow social media for Best Ever You. But the thing about Best Ever You is Best Ever You is exactly that. It's about you. It's really not about me. It's about you. And so Best Ever You sort of serves as a little bit of a marketing company in a way where we take people and I really never charge people for this, but we take people and we help develop their platform and get their word out. We'll retweet you. We'll repost you. We'll redo everything. We'll put you on the radio for an hour with us and get your message out. But what it is, it's not just me doing that. It's like a little army of people that have banded together. It's the Best Ever You Network. So when you send something our way, we all retweet it out. So the potential there for your message to go out could go to millions of people.
Well, we've run out of time today, but I'd love to have you come back sometime. And it's been great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
This has been excellent. We've had Elizabeth Hamilton Garino here. Please go to our website, which is hername.com. Also, www.besteveryou.com. Twitter, besteveryou. And you should run, not walk, to buy the book.
Run.
Percolate.
Wog is in the book.
It's a beautiful book. It feels like a really good book. And it reads like a really good book, which is
Hay House does an amazing job.
The publisher is Hay House. The name of the book is Percolate. Please look at it. Look to buy it at local bookstores and or online. And you've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. We will be back next week. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.